And this is especially in the church's understanding of the real presence. And this is my job for the church. And last November, we had a meeting from 43 countries of delegates sent by the bishops to prepare for the next International Eucharistic Congress in Seville in June of 93, which for the Holy Father is to be the commemoration of the fifth centennial of the discovery of the New World. Now the delegates there from many countries met, I believe, for 4 solid days. Well, found out how many were there, and I put together, have any of you seen my little paperback on Eucharistic Adoration, Development of Doctrine? Have you seen it? Do you have a copy?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a copy?
Yes, sir. A small one.
Please?
A small one.
It's about 50 pages. Well, I might have a copy somewhere in the house. But what I try to show there, that's meant for the bishops, is that we now in the 20th century, and toward the end of the 20th century, we now understand the real presence much more clearly than was understood even at the turn of the century. So that now we should have not have less but more Eucharistic adoration. Not less exposition but more. Not fewer tabernacles but more. There's a war going on. Did you know that? There's a war going on. And that war is also in the Catholic Church. Well, I know. A priest calling me up. I just sat down to my noon meal. Sat down, spread my napkin. Man across me said, John, you're being paged. Very convenient. Hearing aid is very selective. So I left everything there and went over to the kitchen to answer my page. A priest calling from another state. He talked maybe 20 minutes. By that time, everybody else had left the table. But lucky, they left all my food on the table, my napkin too. The poor priest, we had to pray for him. He got a Marian shrine in his diocese. He was pastor. And he's in so many cities, closing churches right and left. So they closed the parish. So he asked if he couldn't have a Marian shrine, you know, churches there and everything. And at first the bishop said yes. So we got a Marian shrine in that diocese. Then we got word from the diocese, he's going to close the Marian shrine. So the poor priest, he's calling me up, and he was from the east, so same time as we've got, so he was around 12 o'clock. And he was just so disturbed. And the bishop tells him, either you obey or I'll remove your faculties from offering mass in this diocese. Meeting of the priests and the this pastor was there. The bishop told the assembled priest, we don't need a Marian shrine in this diocese. If you want a Marian shrine, let him go elsewhere. I'm saying this, so if you have no illusions, believe me, I'm not here just to entertain you or to share with you some of my 31 years of education. Preserve the faith. In other words, this is now secularism. And for secularism, as you know, secularism, I think I should put this on the board. Our lady stays there and I got my board over here. Seculum is the Latin word for world. Now in English, we drop the A and we have secular. Secular means worldly. Seculum, most Americans, as I tell English speaking people, if you don't know any Latin, you are not fully familiar with the Catholic faith. Sisters, could you get permission to study Latin? Do you think you could? For Mother? Sister Freddie would be calling me up on Thursday. Can I ask her? It'd be good for you. There is a priest here today. Oh, wonderful. Father.
Just want to see what you're up to.
Great. God bless you, Father. So, secularism is world and ism. Now, the adjective is secular. Now, in Latin it's secularis, but English word secular, we just add ism. Now, seculum is this world. So, another name for secularism is this worldism. This is the only world. This is the only world, either sure exists or that is worth living in, and well, enjoy yourself as much as you can. And suffer as little as possible. Okay. Pope Paul VI spent his pontificate pointing out, urging, stressing, and then finally, as we know, publishing the one single papal encyclical, the only one ever devoted exclusively in 19 centuries of papal history, the only one devoted exclusively to defending the real peasants, called in English Mystery of Faith, in Latin Mysterium Fidei. And I ask all of you to get one, read it. If you haven't read it yet, it's my guardian angel to keep you awake so you won't be able to fall asleep. Read it. Meditate on it. Diocese after diocese, parish after parish, priest after priest is being subjected to this secularist, well, restatement of what we mean by the real peasants. And in seminaries, and seminaries close by, that the books which the seminarians read deny the real peasants. Is it any wonder the Holy See tells me they've never had more petitions for a declaration of nullity of the ordination than in recent years? Men are ordained, they don't know what they're being ordained for. Like getting married, not knowing what marriage is about. They don't know. It is then the Encyclical Mysterium Fidei. And in that document, Paul VI, written, by the way, before the Second Vatican Council closed, here it is, the Catholic faithful to worship our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. Now, that does not mean by any means to minimize the value of daily Mass, by all means. Although I am told one diocese hasn't become a law yet, but the bishop of that diocese wants to limit Mass to one Mass on Sunday a week. And of course the reception of communion. But behind the Mass and behind communion is the real presence. If you don't believe in the real presence, you don't have a real Mass. So I think I asked you, how many parishes still have a bulletin or a sign outside the church, Mass or Masses? Is everything else but the liturgy of this and Eucharist that? Anything but the Mass? Or Mass still, sacrifice of the Mass? You see those questions? Thank you. I appreciate your generosity with these questions. Isn't Protestantism, with its individual interpretation of the scriptures, in fact, pure modernism? Yes. In other words, modernism is a development of Protestantism. And George Kill had been a Protestant before he became converted to the Catholic faith and became a Jesuit. There are lay people interested in planning a tribute for the 25th anniversary of Bonae Vitae. What do you suggest? Would you participate? 25th? Let's see. That's
October.
Yes, I'd be very happy to participate. Like I told you, the day Humanae Vitae was issued, a bishop from the Conference of Bishops called me up and said, you know, we're in trouble. Can you help? So I've got some ammunition that I provided the bishops with to defend Humanae Vitae. Is it correct theology to say that God needs our love or wants our love? First person in the Trinity. As we know, God needs or wants for nothing. Well, it depends on what you mean by the word want. In English, you can use any word to mean whatever you want. Not much help. By the way, that's why we write so much and talk so much. It takes that long to get our ideas across. We may say that God wants our love, but not want in the sense of need. To say Jesus, second person in the Holy Trinity, is God and man, then we could say Jesus wants our love because Jesus is part of the Trinity. Is it proper to say Jesus needs our love? No. First of all, as a man, during his mortal stay on earth and up to his death on Calvary, we could say that as a man, Christ or Jesus wanted, even in the sense of saying he needed. But notice, there's a difference between needing something and wanting to need it. Am I clear? What we need, we have to need. Does that make sense? He chose to need. But then once he was risen from the dead and glorified, he cannot even speak of Jesus as a man, needing, because there is no want or human need on the part of Christ since his resurrection and glorification. Would you please explain when women can be Eucharistic ministers during Mass and or when visiting the sick? Well, all I can tell you is, and this has been my policy over the years, teaching priests, teaching others, there would have to be very extraordinary circumstances for women to be needed to administer the Holy Eucharist. But once I say that, well, the walls cave in on me, because in one diocese after another, I know only one diocese in Lincoln, Nebraska, where the then bishop of that diocese gave notice to his people that he wanted acolytes, lay people, to be trained and then dedicated for lifetime ministry as acolytes, with the right then to assist with the distribution of Holy Communion, beyond what bishops, of course, priests, and deacons are ordained to do. Once you've cared for the needs of the people through priests and deacons, as a real need, then acolytes and the canon law is there black on white, and the acolytes are to be men, masculine gender. Hear what I am saying. For me to explain when women can be, well, they're all over. And I consider women's entering into the Eucharistic ministry as being one of the main reasons for the dramatic drop of vocations in our country, by 90% to be exact. This year, my own Detroit province does not have one novice, not one, entering this year, not one. I talked to the fellows, what am I going to becoming a priest for? The women are with bishops backing that want to be ordained. They were in the sanctuary telling priests what to do, and how spoken I could be. You'd be surprised what dioceses have women chancellors. You are in the diocese. And the bishop then becomes a yes man. Thanks for the question. As good Catholics, what should our attitude be toward Thomas Merton in all his books, or anybody's books recommended reading? Nothing after 1968, after Humanae Vitae. Even before 1968, Merton was going off track. I think I've told you, I knew Thomas Merton personally, worked with him on the request of his own abbot, met with him, we talked. I know Merton very well. Merton's problem was he was never really educated in the Catholic faith. Never. He became a Catholic, emotionally attracted by the Catholic faith, had a very fine intellect, but that intellect was never educated in the Catholic faith. Never. His first biographer claims he died as a Buddhist. I think he was still a Christian. So I would say, after 1968, nothing. But even after, or even before 1968, even his bestseller, you know, Seven Story Mountain. Because he's got ideas there that you would excuse a new convert for writing that way. But then, as you know, Merton is almost the cornerstone of so much of the New Age movement. And perpetual adoration, is it a proper and good practice to ask your guardian angel to stand guard when there is a need to leave the chapel for a moment? For example, to answer the door and so on. Yes, but I wouldn't make a habit of it. Yes. Should be two people there, so one has to leave for whatever reason, somebody would be left there. I think the Guineas would agree on that. They're smiting Father Harden. He's on target. Would it be good to talk with your pastor if he is using a lot of lay Eucharistic ministers? If so, how would one deal with the issue of meeting the demands of the large number of people? Well, I'm not sure it would do much good. And of course, see, it works in reverse. The more of these extraordinary ministers there are, the fewer priests we're going to have. Because people, men, how many have told me, why should he become a priest? Women are running the church already. I think I told you about the priest in his southern diocese, but gave a lecture. Then we had snacked together before the night. And he told me about his problems in the diocese. And I asked him, well, have you talked things over with your bishop? He said, I can't. You mean you can't? I can't. For 5 years, there's a woman at the chance who will never let our bishop talk to any of his priests alone. She's got to be there. Yeah. And what should be done is set aside acolytes whose job is precisely when there's a real need, but they've got to be men. That's what my friend Bishop Flavin, when he did that in Lincoln, Nebraska, he said, never thought I'd make national television. Feminists from all over the country pounced on him. Thomas M. Book on Silence is real, real good. Thomas Merton's Book on Silence is real, real good. I think that was early in his writings. Okay. You can write a very beautiful book on silence, but it depends on how you define silence. And Thomas Merton was not all that silent, by the way. Could you comment on the recent newspaper articles about priests and defiant sex behaviors? Do you think the radical feminist movement is responsible for this kind of publicity? Yes, and they are responsible for even the sexual aberrations among men. The deepest need in a man's heart is to be loved. Men calling me from Washington just before coming here to class. I've just told him to get out of the house. She's Catholic. She says her prayers. Well, and men want to be loved. It's one reason that a man marries, in case you don't know. The greatest single need in the modern world is woman's love. It's a large statement. The gay movement among men, I credit in large measure to feminism. Explain what you mean when you say our country will not be spared martyrs and gay martyrdom. How? Well, it's going on right now. Please do call me up. I know the bishop well. Very well. So to remain a priest and to suffer. And this diocese does not need a shrine to Our Lady. It's a large diocese. Lord. So the martyrdom is going on. Going on. Greetings from a fellow exile. Father Gerrit, prior, whom you taught at River Forest. Thank you. Is the Catholic Church, or did the Catholic Church begin when Jesus was conceived, or when he began his crucifixion? Well, absolutely speaking, it began with Christ's conception. Because the church had to have a head. But the church qua church came into existence the moment Jesus died. Christ's death brought the church into existence. It's the universal teaching of the church. Can a Catholic marry in a Protestant church? Can be. Is it merged out? Can be. Is the marriage sacramental? Could be. The Catholic is marrying a Protestant who is baptized. Can the Catholic receive all of the sacraments? Yes, in other words, with dispensation. Now, like I'm not justifying why people do these things, but can they do that with a dispensation? And could a person then, would that be a valid marriage? Yes. Could it be a sacramental marriage? Yes, if both are baptized. Could the Catholic receive the sacraments? Yes, but not a quote sacrament from the Protestant minister. Can one be removed from life support if there is any chance of survival? Does the dying have to be fed? The dying has to be fed. Has to be fed. How many confused priests, how many confused doctors, otherwise good people? Sam is baptized Methodist. Linda is baptized Catholic. They married in the Catholic or Methodist church. They had one child, then divorced after 11 years of marriage. Sam then meets Lita, who was baptized Catholic. They marry by a justice of the peace and have two children. This is Lita's first marriage. Sam second. She is raising the children Catholic. Is she living in sin? Can she receive communion? Well, it could well be that that first marriage in the Methodist Church was not valid in the first place. So what they should do is find out. In other words, there was no annulment of the first marriage. And maybe there was no first valid marriage. Should be looked into and I'd like to offer my services, but I should be looked into. Can a Catholic be cremated, or must we be buried? Cremation is permitted for extraordinary reasons. It is not recommended. A couple asked if they could stay in our home while in the Detroit area. This is a remarriage for both, and I am almost certain the marriage is invalid. So I have a grave obligation not to let them sleep in my home. Despite the serious problem it will raise with my husband. Then I would say this. Absolutely speaking, as an act of charity, you could have them stay in your home. But if there's some Jesuitical way in which you could, well, avoid doing so, I would recommend it. Would it be absolutely speaking permissible? I would say yes. Can a Catholic born mentally impaired be successfully homeschooled? Depends on how badly impaired the child is. Oh, by the way, there's a young boy, well, he's a little older now, 11 years old, in Dallas. Was some 10 years old when we first met. Had never been given communion. So I told the president, he'd give Johnny his first communion. But just to play safe, call up the pastor. So they made an appointment for me to call up, talk to the pastor by telephone. I'm going to give Johnny his first communion. And he gave me some name objections. I said, well, look, I'm doing it. You don't have to do it. I'm doing it. All right. So I give the boy first communion. Since going to communion, of course, now they've got to find the right priest because not every priest will do it. But Johnny has made marvelous progress. Also, are there any converts who will accept a person with this birth defect? Oh, converts, convents. Yes, depending on how serious the condition is. And then you'd have to find out which community takes care of those. Now, the sisters in Northfield, Michigan, sisters or daughters of St. Mary Providence, I think, depending on how the child is impaired, if you have a long waiting list, call them up, tell them Father Harden suggested. I know them well. May any kind of bread be validly consecrated in the Latin Rite, or must it be but contain only flour, wheat, and water? If it contains anything else except flour and water, it may be valid, but is dubiously valid. Therefore, should not be consecrated. People are serious about these questions. They start missing it. Oh, they're missing it. If the church was born on Calvary, why have we been taught that Pentecost is the birthday of the church? Oh, all right. There are two kinds of birthdays. The actual birthday of the church, when the church came into existence, was on Calvary. But, call it a birthday if you wish, the church began to propagate on Pentecost Sunday. So the church qua church objectively came into existence on Good Friday. But the church as a propagating church. Sometimes we say the church came into social existence on Pentecost Sunday. Absolutely speaking, however, the church came into existence on Calvary. Declaration of nullity of orders is different from laicization. How do you know if a priest is truly ordained? As long as the bishop who ordained him was a validly ordained bishop, you can trust that the priest was also validly ordained. No, laicization is not the same as declaration of nullity. I don't like the word laicization, because a priest never becomes a layperson. Never. In other words, declaration of nullity would be that the man had not been ordained in the first place. As quotes laicization, is that a man who is validly ordained is then dispensed from all, or some at least, of his priestly duties. What authors are in books are recommended reading on the New Age movement and on the feminist movement. You recommend Unicorn in the Sanctuary, New Age, okay. Books by Constance Cumby, okay. Ungodly of Age, yes, okay. I think I'm going to be with, let's see, I think I'll be with, who is this? The author of Ungodly of Age, what's her name?
John Steichen,
yes. Either this week or lecture that I'm giving somewhere beyond the program with a very good, intelligent Catholic woman. What does the Vatican II say about the use of Latin during the Mass? Vatican II prescribes the Latin of the Mass. There was nothing in Vatican II about the vernacular the way we now have it in the Church. Should Latin be used often? Yes. If so, when and where? Well, as often as you can get it. And, today is Tuesday, tomorrow, 6 o'clock, there are class in Latin. And I tell people, to preserve the Catholic faith, the Latin language must be preserved in the Catholic Church. Must be. Do you know for sure if the Montessori method of teaching is part of the New Age movement? Well, not the Montessori method, called Montessori method. However, when it comes to teaching religion, I think I told you about this, didn't I? There's a woman, and she lives in Rome, which of course gives her credibility. And must be like 8 years ago. One of my students in Chicago was a teacher at a school at which they use a Montessori method of teaching religion. And she was not comfortable with the method. So we talked, she showed me all the books, explained the method, and then I just told her this is no good. She told the principal. The principal got worried. So he got this lady to come from Italy. And I came to Washington. We met in Washington. Spent about 3 hours together. I didn't convince her. She was convinced, and she writes books, all kinds of books, that children should not be given doctrine. Earlier in their years, they are not mentally capable of assimilating it. So I said, my gosh, nobody is capable of comprehending the mysteries. We don't deprive children of telling them about the real presence or the Holy Trinity or the Incarnation because they're too young. I never convinced her. So if you can get a copy of that recording, because the whole thing has been recorded. She went back to Italy. I hope they've stopped using that method in that school, which is widely throughout the world. And the bad part is that she's using the word Montessori, because she's adapted ideas from one of Montessori's sons. A word written by Maria Montessori, which is published by the Theosophical Society. Also, I read some literature that stated this method is New Age. Well, I can say this. The Montessori method can be, and in this case, the case of religion, it can be used to promote the New Age movement. Personally, what I know about the Montessori method, I do not think the Montessori method, qua method, is New Age.